Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Well, hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. We're hitting midsummer, when skin cancer and protecting skin from sun overexposure is front of mind. Joining us on this Medical Monday to discuss cancers of the skin and how to treat and prevent them is Dr. Karen Tedesco of New York Oncology Hematology. Dr. Tedesco, who, by the way, is the vice president of her practice, practices general oncology and hematology. She earned her medical degree from SUNY Health Science Center in Syracuse. She completed her residency in internal medicine at the University of Michigan Medical Center and her fellowship at hematology and oncology at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Dr. Tedesco is currently the director of New York Oncology Hematology's Hereditary Cancer Risk Assessment Program. Dr. Tedesco, Karen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me today.
Oh, I'm very impressed. I'm particularly impressed by the fact that you're vice president.
Well, thank you.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So how dangerous is the sun to us?
Well, the sun is very dangerous, so it's important to use sunblock consistently, not just when you think it's sunny out or when you think it's hot enough. So whenever you're going to be outside and have exposed areas of skin, you should be using sunblock. And everybody should, not just fair-skinned people who are at somewhat higher risk of the damaging effects of sun.
But do you use it?
I do.
You're pretty fair-skinned.
I do.
Yeah.
I put sunblock on my face and neck every day.
Do you? I never do, and but when I do, it's always sort of stinky. I mean, you know, I don't like that stinky smell. You know what I mean?
But well, you can certainly find some formulations that have different smells, not to endorse any particular brands, but I do like Neutrogena sunblocks, I think, are nice. They have a little more of a citrusy smell for people who don't like that greasy, coconutty kind of smell. So that one's a little bit different if people don't care for that kind of odor.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Could you speak a little bit about verrucous keratosis?
Anything that uses the term verrucous usually means warty in appearance. And keratoses are skin lesions that some of which can be precancerous and some of which are not. There are a variety of different types. They can be more common as people get older. They're not necessarily sun-related or cancerous.
Now, you're a hematologist, an oncologist, and not a dermatologist. How do the two come together?
I think this type of skin lesion would more commonly be taken care of by a dermatologist. Fortunately, there's not too much of a role for a medical oncologist. Mm-hmm. Generally, we use chemotherapies and immunotherapies to treat skin cancer. So most commonly, what we would see as medical oncologists are melanomas, though sometimes we see certain types of squamous cell or basal cell carcinomas, particularly if they're quite large or not able to be completely removed with surgery.
So remind us all what a melanoma is, okay?
A melanoma is a type of skin cancer, and that's probably the most serious type of skin cancer, the most potentially deadly type of skin cancer. A lot of times people think of them as being dark in color. They're not always that way, though. Sometimes melanomas can not be pigmented or can be unusual colors. They can be related to sun exposure, typically happen more commonly in fair-skinned people with fair skin, light eyes, oftentimes people who live in warm climates who have a lot of sun exposure. So particularly high instances in people living in places like Israel or Australia who have fair skin but live in very warm climates. Intermittent sun exposure can be very important in the development of melanomas. So people who have blistering sunburns at young ages, that puts them at high risk.
Later on, years later.
Yes, many years later, decades later. So that's why it's important to be consistent with sunblock use and keeping skin covered, using protective eyewear, that type of thing.
Why eyewear? Can you get a melanoma of the eye?
You can get a melanoma of the eye.
Very dangerous, right?
They are, and very important, again, to use protective eyewear. Melanomas can happen anywhere, so we think of them as being on sun-exposed areas, but they can happen in other places that are not sun-exposed, such as inside the mouth, sure. In the eye, in the sinuses, even in the reproductive tract.
Yeah. Okay. Jim, you want another crack at this or not?
What would be the difference between Veruca Freeze and the big box store wart removers?
Can you repeat that?
The question is, what's the difference between the big box store wart removers and what, Jim?
Veruca Freeze.
And Veruca Freeze.
I'm not that familiar with Veruca Freeze. Is that a...
Well, it's something like liquid nitrogen or has that effect.
So that would be something you do in a physician's office as opposed to the over-the-counter wart removers?
Stuff you squirt out of a can.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Jim, wish we could help you more with that choice, but we can't. And we thank you for the call.
Okay,
appreciate it very much. Okay, let's go to Sarah in Argyle, where everybody wears socks. Okay, Sarah, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because I'm wondering, is it really not okay to have any sun exposure to have a tan? Like a light tan, is that means damage is being done?
That is correct. Unfortunately, even a light tan, although it may be attractive, is dangerous and is a sign of skin damage.
So don't do it. Although I have to say that, you know, I've always felt that the kids, like, I lived on a beach in the summers and I wasn't a very good athlete. So while everybody else was out there playing volleyball, I was reading the Hardy Boys on our porch. It turns out that while it wasn't really a choice, it was a brilliant strategy if you think about it.
Yes, you probably avoided skin cancer and wrinkles by keeping yourself in the shade.
You may have. Sarah, do you want to follow up on this?
Well, I have kids and we're outside all the time, sure. And I feel like when I put sunscreen on them all the time and then they're, you know, very pale, that if they do get any sun exposure, they get burned. And if I just let them get a little bit of sun and they build, you know, a slate tan, that they're skin is somehow tougher or something. I don't
so, as the old saying goes, wrong.
Yeah, it would be better to consistently use sunblock.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks,
well, thank
Sarah,
you.
From Argyle. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay. Dick in Longmeadow is okay. Go ahead, Dick. Ask your question.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my
sure.
call. I have two questions, and there's some other people in the room, so I'm going to hang up after I ask them.
Well, we don't like that. That's
okay.
Because we may have a follow-up question. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the first question is, with relative to cancer, with different cancers, sometimes they stage a cancer, stage one this, stage two. And I'm just wondering, in melanoma, do they stage that type of cancer cell? That's the first question. And the second question is, when we have a bacterial infection, our body responds to that foreign cell, and we get a fever, and we go to the doctor, and so forth and so on. And I notice you with cancer, a lot of times we grow cancers, and the body doesn't respond. It tricks the body, that cell, into saying everything's okay, and everything keeps going. So I was wondering if the oncologist could comment on those two questions.
Karen?
Okay. Yes, thank you, Dick, for the questions. Yes, melanoma is staged. It actually has a very complicated staging system with multiple parts, but some of the most important features that are taken into account are the depth of the melanoma, so how thick it is. That's probably the most important thing, so how deep it goes into the skin. We also look at whether there's ulceration or not on the surface of the melanoma.
What does that mean, ulceration?
Ulceration means like an area of openness where the skin is broken down.
Yeah.
Other things that are looked at by the pathologist when they look at the sample under the microscope are how active the cells are in terms of how many mitoses or how many dividing cells they see. Other things that are important are whether the melanoma has spread to the lymph nodes or not. That's a feature that's taken into account in the staging system. And then beyond that, whether the melanoma has spread to other parts of the body, which you might assess by imaging studies such as CAT scans or PET scans.
Dick, thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You have a very good chance of getting in right now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back, and it's a very interesting subject. We'll be back in seconds.
Support comes from Middletown Medical's Pediatric Express, walk-in urgent care for children in Chester with a pediatrician available weeknights until 9 p.m. MiddletownMedical.com. Ruggie's Subaru in the village of Rhinebeck. New Subarus and over 150 pre-owned vehicles specializing in Subaru and GM vehicles, service, and parts. Ruggie'sSubaru.com. Ellis Medicine, a comprehensive community healthcare network offering appointments and referrals to over 600 physicians. Reinventing healthcare one patient at a time. 1-844-518-DOCS. And River Valley Market, Northampton, Massachusetts. A food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery. RiverValleyMarket.coop.
And we are back, as promised, with Dr. Karen Tedesco of New York Oncology Hematology. We got all the phones are ringing, Karen, but I wanted to ask you very quickly. You're the director of New York Oncology Hematology's Hereditary Cancer Risk Assessment Program. What is that?
That's a program that we have through New York Oncology Hematology, and we participate with U.S. Oncology as well, our national affiliate, to offer programs for hereditary risk or genetic risk assessment and potentially testing for patients who are appropriate. So we see patients from within our practice who already have cancer diagnoses, who may have certain features such as young age at diagnosis or multiple family members with cancer that make it look suspicious that they may have a hereditary cancer syndrome. We also see patients who do not yet have cancer diagnoses, but may be at very high risk of developing them due to family history of those type of situations, multiple cancers in the family, cancers occurring at a young age. So we see patients who refer themselves to us for that type of testing, or a lot of times the patients are sent to us from their primary care providers, their gynecologists who may be doing their pelvic exams, ordering their mammograms, that type of thing, and may be aware of family history of breast or ovarian cancers in their family.
Okay.
Even melanomas can sometimes go along with some hereditary cancer syndromes that associate with breast and ovarian cancers as well as pancreatic cancer.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Mary in Beacon. Mary in Beacon, you're on.
Hi, I just wanted to share a story. My beloved aunt died prematurely because she ignored the red spot on her bridge of her nose. It was between, you know, her eyes where the glasses are. She just didn't think about it. She put a sunscreen everywhere else, didn't bother with that. And by the time they caught it, it had gone into her bloodstream. It was very fast moving, and she got lung cancer, breast cancer. Her bones came through the surface, and she died of it. So I want people to realize this is a very serious condition.
Thank you, Mary. And Doctor, Mary just mentioned a red spot, but I thought you said earlier dark spot.
Yeah, a lot of times we think of melanoma as being particularly dark spots. Sometimes we use the term ugly duckling type of lesions on the skin, which means something that just looks different than other skin lesions people have. A lot of us tend to have freckles or different types of moles or things. So a melanoma might just be something that looks very different than all of the other type of spots you have. A few things that we look for with skin cancers that may call attention to something that needs to be checked out. We kind of say the A, B, C, Ds, and sometimes Es. So A is asymmetry. So a lesion that has sort of an asymmetric border or sort of a funny shape. The borders themselves should be regular, not rough or ragged. The color, again, a color that might be very different from other spots on your skin, or a lesion that has multiple different colors in it. If it's sort of looking bluish or red or black or funny colors, that's something that should be checked out. The D stands for diameter, so anything greater than 5 millimeters in diameter.
What's that, a pencil pointer, a pencil eraser, or what?
Yeah, a little smaller than a pencil eraser,
right?
Probably. And E stands for evolving, so anything that's changing. So maybe even if it doesn't exactly meet those criteria, but you notice it's getting bigger or it's getting darker, would be signs that you should have it checked out. And as Mary, the last caller, pointed out, things can occur in funny areas and places that we don't always think to put sunblock, such as that bridge of the nose or on the tops of the ears. When you have a skin exam done by a doctor or even doing self-skin exams, you should really check carefully all areas.
Okay, well, that's great. Let's go to Joe in Chatham. Okay, Joe in Chatham, you're on.
Hey, how are you? I was wondering if you have a place like on the bottom of your foot or something where the sun wasn't exposed to that you could get, you should check also, because I always think of that Bob Marley story. Is that fact or fiction?
No, that's true. Thank you. That's a good question. Again, melanomas can occur anywhere, even on areas that are not sun exposed. Particularly in African Americans or darker skinned individuals, the palms of the hands and the soles of the feet can be areas where melanoma may occur more commonly. You should also check areas, the webbing in the fingers and between the toes can be areas where melanomas can hide. So you make an excellent point. Those are important areas to check.
Any specific color, like black areas versus brown spots?
Yeah, again, I think the same criteria as for other locations. Certainly something that looks different than what you see other places or something that's evolving over time. It does seem like a lot of people have sort of flat, light brownish areas on the bottom of their feet, particularly darker complexioned individuals. So again, looking for changes over time is important.
Yeah, I've got a third degree when I was young from the sun. Like peeling really, really bad. And there's, just concerned about it. Being a house painter for 26 years and then being aware of it in the last 5 years, sometimes you just wonder if it's too late covering up after all those years being exposed.
Well, I don't think it's ever too late. I think, you should be using good skincare practices now, even if you weren't in the past. And given the risk that you've had with the blistering sunburn and the years of exposure through your work, it might be a good idea for you to see a dermatologist for a baseline skin check and maybe an annual visit.
Joe, we're going to let you go. Thank you
very
much.
Much.
Okay. Doctor, so tell me something. The hematologist takes over after the dermatologist says, this is getting a little bit more extensive.
Right. A lot of skin cancers, as oncologists, we would not see in particular. So generally, things like squamous cell carcinomas or basal cell carcinomas that are surgically removed or treated with topical treatments, a lot of times a dermatologist or even a general surgeon or plastic surgeon handles those issues. Melanomas, we would certainly want to see as a medical oncologist. Even if someone thinks they're very early stage, we would like to see those people and be involved in their care.
I once said to my dermatologist, I said to this wonderful woman, I said, "So is this," I pointed to something on my hand, I said, "is this a melanoma?" She said, "If it was, you'd be up on the operating table right now." I'll never forget that. Okay, let's go to Susan in Beckett. Susan.
Hi. I have a question regarding vitamin D. Everybody's vitamin D deficient. If you put on sunscreen, you block the skin from absorbing the rays and manufacturing vitamin D. Also, as you age, you don't manufacture vitamin D as well from the sun as when you were younger. You have a protocol for that?
That's a good point that you make about the vitamin D. The amount of sun exposure people need to get adequate vitamin D is not very much, probably about 15 minutes per day. As you mentioned, most of us are vitamin D deficient, probably about 80% of us living in this climate. Again, I think it's safer to use sunblock, and if you are deficient in vitamin D, potentially use oral supplementation, although we do know that's not the best way to produce vitamin D, but probably better in terms of your overall health, not to incur additional sun exposure.
Well, why did you say it's not the best way? I mean, I take 5,000 units every day. Why is it not the best way?
Well, it really is better to get it from sun exposure and produce it yourself. But again, knowing what we do about sun exposure, I think the better alternative is, as you're doing, Alan, to take it orally.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Suzanne. Okay, let's go to Amy in Albany. Okay, Amy, you're on.
Hi. I wonder if the doctor can speak to the difference between chemical and mineral sunscreens. I have seen some stuff online and also in a magazine that spoke about chemical sunscreens actually posing a risk of cancer and stating that mineral sunscreens are safer. Is that something the doctor can comment on?
Yeah, I'm not really aware of mineral sunscreens being safer in particular. I think as long as you're using something that has broad UVA and UVB coverage, I don't think there's really data to substantiate that certain types of sunscreens are putting people at risk for skin cancer.
Oh, okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay. That leaves one free phone. Let's go to Rebecca in Milford, Pennsylvania. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is not related to the skin. My daughter was diagnosed with a rare disease called Castleman's disease, and this was done by an oncologist, hematologist, and they recommended that she do radiation and chemo, and then they sent her to a specialist at the University of Nebraska who specializes in Castleman's, and he recommended prednisone. So she's currently on prednisone, but I'm just curious if you have any experience with Castleman's and if you know, which type of treatment usually has better success.
Yeah, it's certainly not something that most of us have a lot of experience with because, as you alluded to, it's quite uncommon. A lot of times it is treated with prednisone or steroids initially. It's often an inflammatory disorder where the body is making too many inflammatory mediators and can give people kind of flu-like symptoms. Sometimes people can have problems with lymphadenopathy or swollen lymph nodes. People can have skin changes related to it. So often the first-line treatment is anti-inflammatories. So I think, not knowing the entire situation, prednisone is probably a good starting point.
Prednisone, of course, okay. Is a risk in itself, isn't it? By the time if you take too much of it, it can be...
Yeah, prednisone or any type of steroid can be wonderful medications, and they can have a lot of terrible long-term side effects. They can cause mood changes, loss of bone density. They can cause some atrophy or bruising.
So the name of the
skin.
Game is to get off as soon as you can.
Yeah, I mean, try right. to do, short, high dose right. and get off.
Yeah, that's what they did. They gave her 80 milligrams for 2 months, and she's just getting ready and goes to the doctor tomorrow. And if her tests are good, then they'll start scaling it back.
Hey, Rebecca,
thank you so much.
Thanks for the most interesting call. Thank you very much. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne. Okay, Lynn, you're on.
Hi, hello.
Hey.
Thank you, Alan.
Sure.
I want to ask the doctor one thing, moderation, about some people are called about moderation in sun, and... has any study been around the application of sunscreen?
So the question is, let me give it, only because with Lynn we have so many people behind you. The question
sure.
you have is it dangerous to put too much sunscreen application
sort
on?
Sort of, yes. But I know I'm going to get cancer if I don't put any on. But what's going to happen if I don't do put too much on?
I don't think it would be dangerous to put too much on. Probably just smelly and messy and wasteful of money.
Nice point. Kind of yelling. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Okay, let's go to Susan in Northfield. Susan, you're on.
Hi, if I'm hearing correctly, you're saying that there could be a link between skin cancers and other cancers such as breast and perhaps colon cancer. The reason I ask is because I had a sister who succumbed to breast cancer, a brother who succumbed to colon cancer. Both were redheads, fair-skinned, and we lived in the sun back in the 60s and 70s with no sunblock. They both blistered, and I'm just wondering if there is a link or a possible link there.
Right. I don't know that their being fair-skinned would necessarily make them at higher risk for colon cancer or breast cancer, but with some of the hereditary cancer syndromes, there can be skin manifestations, or melanoma can associate with some familial cancer syndromes. So, for example, breast cancer, the BRCA2, one of the genes that's been associated with familial breast and ovarian cancer syndromes, those people who have that genetic abnormality can also have higher risk of melanoma, as well as some other cancers, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, and maybe a little bit higher risk of colon cancer based on that genetic abnormality. As far as for familial cancer, colon cancer syndromes, they can have some skin manifestations that can associate with the syndromes, but generally not an association with melanoma and colon cancer.
Okay.
Susan, thank you.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. Two free phones open for the first time. Let's go to Suzanne in Saratoga. Suzanne, you're on.
Oh, hi. I had just come in about 10 minutes ago, and you happened to be talking about genetic testing. So I just really have a quick comment about that. About 15 years ago, after explaining my family history yet again to my doctor, she suggested me take doing the genetic testing for the breast cancer gene. And at that time, I was I tested positive for the BRCA2. And I actually am just very thankful for that, because it had just made it was it enabled me to really kind of take charge of my health. I take good care of myself. I have a really wonderful doctor. But since that time, I've had cousins and aunts also get tested, and we all carry the same gene, like the same strand of the gene. So it really, I'm just thankful for that kind of testing now. So I just want to make a comment about that. It's really helped all of us sort of take charge of this legacy we feel like we carry with us from generations.
Well, thank you for your call, Suzanne, and for sharing your story. And I'm glad that you did share your information after you were tested with family members. Unfortunately, I hear a lot of stories where people don't want to communicate with their family members, or people don't want to be tested. And I'm so glad to hear that your family was proactive so that you can protect yourselves from a variety of type of cancers that you may be at risk for. So thank you so much for calling and sharing your story.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Yeah, this is a great show. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's go to Mike in Fort Ann. Mike, you're on.
Hello, doctor. I'd like to hear your comment on whether or not nutrition plays an important role in the development, treatment, or prevention of skin cancer specifically, or improper nutrition for that matter.
I don't think we've identified a clear link between nutrition and melanoma at this point. We certainly do know that nutrition can play a role in the development of a lot of other types of cancer, in particular diets that are high in fat. So unfortunately, our Western diets probably put us at risk for a lot of types of cancer, including common ones like colon cancer and breast cancer. We know that alcohol intake can increase risk of a variety of different types of cancer, most notably those of the head and neck and upper digestive tract, but others as well. We also know that obesity or being overweight, having sedentary lifestyle, can increase risk of some type of cancers. So again, I think plays more a role in other types of cancers rather than melanoma or skin cancers.
Okay, so there isn't a known nutrient that might play a role in the prevention of skin cancer that's found in our day-to-day diet?
No, not at this point that we found a consistent association.
Nevertheless, Mike, if you stay up late enough at night, in the middle of the night, you'll probably see some quack who tries to tell you that.
I'm sure you will.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Mike. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a break. We will be right back for the third leg of the show.
Support comes from St. Mary's Healthcare, Amsterdam, New York, offering minimally invasive spine surgery. Choose stmarys.com. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, Rhinebeck and New Paltz, providing professional picture framing, fine art materials for students, professionals, and the public. The Atwater Art Gallery upstairs in Rhinebeck, rhinebeckart.com. Aldo's Italian Restaurant and Pizzeria, Block Island, Rhode Island. For over 32 years, a family-owned restaurant offering Italian and seafood specialties such as mussels, Provençal, veal piccata, and pasta alfredo. Inside and patio dining, aldosblockisland.com. And Phoenicia International Festival of the Voice, 5 days of celebrating Spain with music from opera to baroque to flamenco, featuring Rossini's The Barber of Seville, July 30th to August 3rd, PhoeniciaVoiceFest.com. And Manix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in search engine optimization and internet marketing since 1996, ManixMarketing.com.
Well, all five phones are ringing, and we want to get to everybody's calls, so we'll try to keep it short on each case. Let's go to John in Canaan. Hi, John.
Hello there. I have two quick questions. The first is about squamous cell carcinoma, and the question is, how invasive are they? Must they always be removed?
That's a good question. So squamous cell carcinomas most commonly occur on chronically sun-exposed areas, so often on the face or the arms. They tend to be very slowly progressive most of the time. They generally are treated with surgical removal. Sometimes that can be a little bit tricky depending on their location. Again, if they're on the face, that might be a little more difficult than other areas. But they can get to a point where they could become more invasive or might not be able to be removed surgically. That could take many years, but it can happen. Sometimes we end up seeing those patients as medical oncologists who have squamous cell carcinomas that have been neglected for many years and then come to invade deeper than the skin into underlying organs or other structures such that they can't be surgically removed and then need to be treated with chemotherapy and radiation, which often could have been avoided had they been identified earlier.
So the most benign is which of the facial cancers?
The most benign.
Yeah, I'm asking.
Probably either a squamous cell or a basal cell carcinoma. Again, usually if they're identified early, can be surgically removed or treated with some type of local therapy and not be problematic ever again.
But it has,
well, my question is sort of, I mean, it pertains to myself, of course. And I happen to be, like Alan, not so young anymore. I'm 77. So, and I have just had a couple of these things removed, which wasn't a lot of fun. And I'm wondering if they anymore are diagnosed, given my age and given the slowness of their general progression, it might be just as wise to leave them alone.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. As people get into older age brackets or have poor health for whatever reason, even if they're younger, I think you always have to take every case individually and weigh the risks and benefits and what one's life expectancy is. How likely is it that these things will ever become bothersome? That's a good point. If you are going to watch them, though, again, I would watch them very carefully, have them examined by a physician regularly, not just, you know, completely forget about them.
Okay.
And let them fester and become a big problem.
And the second question just has to do with skin block. I've heard it said that anything over 15 is overkill. Is that true? I mean, you can buy 30 and 50, et cetera, but...
Yeah, I think it's good practice to use something at least 15 in SPF, but I don't know that for most people, you know, using 100 as opposed to 50 makes a difference when you get up into those very high numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, John, you've had your turn. We're going to the next one. Thanks
an
awful
lot.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to James in Colony. James in Colony, you're on.
Hey, great program as always. Here's my question. I'm 54 years old. I've worked outdoors since the late 70s, and then full-time starting in 1982. I work on rooftops, on heating and air conditioning equipment. And I'm constantly out in the sun. I got red hair. It used to be red. It's kind of gray now, but, you know, very fair complexion. And I do try to get to the dermatologist every year. I went last year and got a, you know, so-called clean bill of health. But there's something interesting that I noticed that started happening. I wear a wide-brimmed hat, you know, kind of like a safari hat, you know, to try to protect my ears and stuff. Then I noticed that I was still getting sunburns on my face, even though there was no direct line of sight from the sun to my face. And this is due to the fact that now they're making so many of these roofs white, which is a green thing to try to keep the buildings from getting too hot by reflecting the sun radiation back into space. It's also reflecting into my face.
Right.
So now I have to, you know, wear the hat and the sunscreen. Even, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I've even heard of people getting sunburns at the beach with a hat because, you know, the sand reflects a certain amount.
Okay, that's the question. What's the answer?
Right. You make very good points. So I think doing as you are, you know, you having red hair and fair skin, I would tend to use a higher SPF. Keep wearing the wide-brimmed hat as you're doing. Sunglasses. Make sure you're also putting sunblock on your lips. That's an area that sometimes people forget. And you're absolutely right. Reflection can be a problem. So people doing water sports, even people skiing, the reflection off the snow. So again, important to be consistent about sunblock use.
Hey, James, I'm trying to get
everybody in.
Thanks an awful lot.
Right. Thank you.
Bye. Let's go to Robert in Poughkeepsie. Okay, Robert, you're on.
Okay, briefly, but it's ironic your previous caller alluded to my point.
Yeah.
Briefly put, I personally do not use sunblock. I wear long sleeves and long pants always. And with that said, I do wear wide-brimmed hat, SPF 30. It says on the label for the wide-brimmed hat. So my question for you, just briefly put, is do you have any comments to make regarding people like me who wear long sleeves and long pants always and wear wide-brimmed hat rather than use sunblock? That is all.
Well, I think that's a great strategy using protective clothing, and I congratulate you on doing that. But I would also recommend using sunblock on exposed skin areas, too.
Because due to the reflection that you discussed with your previous caller, right?
Right. I mean, you still get exposure to sunlight even if you're taking all those precautions as you are.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Robert. Okay.
Bye.
Let's go to John in Kingston. John in Kingston, you're on.
Hello. This is John. Also got, I'm 75, and I have two squamous lesions removed recently, and I don't sit in the sun anymore, but I can just be with clothes on going from the car to the house, and if I'm in the sun when I come back, I get tingling all over my, wherever the sun hit me through the jacket. So, and I put 50 SPF on, so I don't understand that. What's the tingling from?
So you're putting on sunblock underneath
50.
Your clothing?
Yes. Yes, and I still get, especially if I wear black, I mean, I'm just going into the house and getting, you know, groceries and stuff. I don't go in the sun at all anymore, and I used to be a sun worshiper.
And this is a new problem that you're having?
Yes, in the last year.
Have you seen your physician about it?
I haven't, not about the tingling, no, but, I, when I had the squamish lesions removed last year. I had two of them removed.
Because if it's fairly diffuse where you're having the tingling, I would almost question whether it's something that you're applying to your skin that's causing irritation or potentially a medication or some other medical issue.
Could it be vitamins or something? With the sun or something? Is some kind of interreaction?
I wouldn't think so with vitamins, no. But certainly a lot of medications can cause some photosensitivity.
I just have a heart condition, and I just take two simple medications. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't.
John, I wish we could spend more time.
About the ozone layer? Can it be repaired? Because we might be able to, you know, save ourselves by repairing the ozone layer. Can that happen?
Well, that may be beyond the scope of my knowledge as a medical oncologist about repairing the ozone. It would certainly be great if we could do that. But you're right, that is a big contributing factor to the increase in skin cancers,
yeah,
the
no
deteriorating
question.
Ozone.
No question, John. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go to Kurt in Latham. Okay, Kurt, you're on. Kurt?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question, actually, a number of questions.
You got to keep it short because we're trying to get everybody in, Kurt. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Is there a correlation between sebaceous cysts and lipomas to the development or transformation into malignant or benign cancers?
No, those don't tend to become malignant.
Okay, thanks, Kurt. All right, and that let's go to Elizabeth in Amherst. Elizabeth, you're on. Elizabeth.
Hello.
Go ahead.
So my question is, what is the importance of zinc or titanium oxide, and is it necessary to have those ingredients in sunblock?
I don't think it's necessary. Those are commonly contained in sunblock, and both can be protective.
Okay. That's my question. Thanks.
Thank you, Elizabeth. All right. Let's go to Joe in Pittsfield. Joe, you're on.
Yes. I had a lot of sun exposure over 4 or 5 years in the military and in climates like North Africa, Southeast Asia, and Texas. And so I know I'm probably at high risk. Back in the 60s, we didn't use anything but something to make us burn. But I had in January or December of this last year, a papilloma removed from my lower eyelid. And I know that's a common place for basal cell carcinomas to develop. Is there a correlation between the papilloma and the basal cell carcinoma on the lower eyelid?
Not a correlation. You're right. They both tend to occur in that type of location, and sometimes one can be mistaken for the other. So again, it's important to have any suspicious skin lesions checked out and potentially removed if needed.
Okay, so I saw the papilloma do recur, and I'm having an inflammatory response right now, so I have an appointment coming up with my ophthalmologist, but I hadn't had a discussion with him about that correlation, only because my mother has been recently diagnosed as basal cell carcinoma of the eyelid after 98 years. So.
Okay. So, thank you, Joe.
Well, sounds like she's done well.
She has done well, yeah, and she was not a sun worshiper either, but that's commonplace, as I understand.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Okay, Mary Lou in Rhinebeck. Well, hello, Mary Lou. You're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am basically a person who's got red hair, blue eyes, and I have, like, skin tags, and I've gotten some spots on my legs. But recently, I got one that was black, too, exactly, and they kind of seemed to go away, and then they came back. So I have no idea what that is and what to think.
Well, obviously, without seeing them, it's difficult to tell for sure. But given your complexion, I would say something black sounds concerning on you. So I would have it checked out. And sometimes even things that are malignant can sort of evolve or seem to change over time. So if it's something that's recurring, that in and of itself could be an ominous sign. So I would have it checked out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mary Lou. Thank you to Claire for calling. Claire, you're on.
I would like to know what the difference is because of what doing the sunscreen is compared to the last 30 years of not doing it.
In other words, if you had used sunscreen for 30 years,
yes.
What would the difference between if you hadn't used it and you have used it? Now, I think to some degree, Dr. Tedesco has indicated not everybody listens to every minute of the program, but I think what she indicated is you can suffer years later from having messed up in the beginning. Is that right, Doctor?
Yes, that's absolutely right. So
yes, I'm sorry.
So using sunblock for long periods of time can be protective, and some of the things that happen now if you develop a skin cancer may be the result of practices dating back to 20, 30 years ago when you were not using sunblock or keeping the areas covered. So it's important to do.
But, the people that got it when I was young, what are the statistics about that?
Okay. Have there been studies done, Doctor, which indicate people who use sunblocker as opposed to those who did not in terms of cancer rates, other things like that?
Yeah, I mean, difficult to do well-done studies because of the inconsistencies in use, the inconsistencies in relying on people to report their sunblock use. But again, we know that using sunblock consistently over a prolonged period of time can decrease risk of skin cancer events, as well as other skin problems, you know, pigmentation that people may just find unsightly, wrinkles. So a variety of conditions can be improved by using sunblock and protecting the skin.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Claire.
But there's no research on what can sunblock do to you.
What can it do to you?
In other words, is there any negative research that shows that using sunblock actually hurts you?
I mean, I think there's some studies that have raised the question about seeing increased risk of skin cancer in patients who've used sunblock. But again, I think that may be more confounding because people who are using a lot of sunblock may be the people who are outside and having more sun exposure.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's sort of an artifact of the people who are using sunblock.
Yes.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you.
Right. We'll go to Judy in Orange. Okay, Judy in Orange.
Hi. I have a quick question. I'd like a definition of what the products in the sunblock are most effective. What should I look for in the sunblock?
I mean, I would look for just a broad range of a high SPF number and UVA and UVB protective coverage.
And I missed the answer about, someone asked about zinc as I was calling in, so I didn't get to hear about that. What did they say about zinc?
I mean, a lot of the products do contain zinc or titanium oxide, and I don't favor one of those to be better than another necessarily.
Judy,
okay.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you.
I'm doing my best to get everybody in here. Rose from Kingston. Rose.
Hello.
Hello, Rose.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about time of day. Now, say before 10 in the morning and after 3 in the afternoon, if I'm wearing a broad-brimmed hat and protective clothing, would I still need?
Are you better off, to restate the question, the line's a little weak here, are you better off doing your gardening in the morning and in the afternoon as opposed to in the middle of the day?
Yes, you're right. You're certainly better off avoiding those times from around 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Where the effects of sun are the greatest. So certainly being outside early in the morning or late in the afternoon with coverage of your skin, as you described, is better than midday, but again, would still recommend using sunblock even if you're outside in those sort of off hours.
And cloud cover?
Doesn't
entirely block the sun rays, so would still recommend sunblock even if it appears to be a cloudy, overcast day.
Okay.
Thanks, Rose. Okay, and we'll go to Eileen in Hyde Park. Eileen, you're on.
Yes, I have a friend that was diagnosed with malignant melanoma back around 91 or 92. It was an existing mole she was born with and was really exposed to the sun. It was below her abdomen, below her panty line. Long story short, they did a wide excision, and less than a year later, it recurred. So they removed all the regional lymph nodes in her groin and her abdomen, and she's been cancer-free ever since. Why do you think that is?
Well, good. I'm glad your friend is doing well. That is the primary treatment of melanomas when possible, to do surgical excision and removal of lymph nodes when appropriate. And that is curative for some people. So melanomas are largely treated by our own immune system. So likely her own immune cells, her T cell lymphocytes probably did a good job fighting off any residual cancer cells.
Even though she was stage 4 when it recurred?
Yes. Melanomas tend to be very heavily dependent on the immune system and our own immune response to them. So having the extensive surgery that she did and then her own immune surveillance must have taken care of the melanoma cells.
Eileen, I'm so sorry to cut you off, but I have to because we are out of time. Thank you, Eileen, for calling in. My apologies to all who wanted to call but never got in. I want to thank Dr. Karen Tedesco for being with us today. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Toprasin, developed to provide relief for those living in pain associated with neuropathy and fibromyalgia. Toprasin.com. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Make sure you take WAMC with you. Download our new mobile app for streaming audio. I use it all the time, by the way. Headlines, podcasts, and more. Just go to iTunes or Google Play App Store, search WAMC, and install. Easy to do. On tomorrow's program, an open forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.